Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. So, happy St. Patty's Day. It is the day of green bagels here in New York City, and I hope everyone gets their green, what have you, cookies, maybe, green cabbage and corned beef and potatoes today to celebrate it. But we're actually not going to be talking about that. We're not going to be talking about Irish food because we have a wonderful book today that is all about the American South and its fascinating foodways. And I'm joined by an author who has written a great deal about it. And she is also a James Beard Award-winning author. She has also written the book Shucked about oysters. And she also co-authored The New England Kitchen. And she's written for lots of food publications, Food and Wine. She's written for the Boston Globe, Lucky Peach, and many. And also she's the editor and food writer for Nashville Lifestyles, and she lives in Nashville right now. So welcome to the show, Erin Byers-Murray.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. So I was joking a little bit that your name sounds very Irish, even though you didn't write about that today in this book.
And I did marry an Irishman.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So we're celebrating. We're celebrating. An Irish-American. We're celebrating in our house, in our way.
Cool. Well, I wonder if that involves the topic of your latest book, which is called Grits, a cultural and culinary journey through the South.
Well, I have yet to find a dish where I could put grits into an Irish theme, but I bet it's out there.
Cool. Well, I love this book so much because we've seen a number of really fascinating sort of cultural history books that are focused on one ingredient. So like Mark Kurlansky's books and Milk is his latest, or there's a great book about pawpaws, the fruit. And we had a book about butter and its cultural history, but I've never seen so much one book that is a work of narrative nonfiction exploring the culture and history behind a dish or like a preparation. So this book is about grits and taking that as the lens through which to explore the American South. Why grits?
Well, I didn't grow up eating grits, I'll be frank. Mm-hmm. My husband kind of brought me back to grits as an adult, but I was living in the Northeast. I had been born in the South, mm-hmm. and had sort of lived away from it for a long time and had lived in the Northeast for a long time, and moved back to the South with my family in 2012. And the move was, it was an interesting shift for me just because, I was coming at it from somebody who was born in the South and felt like connected to it, mm-hmm. But not of it, you know? So when I came back, I assumed that getting back to the South, it would be like, oh, this is so easy. And this is so familiar. And
it's like putting on an old pair of jeans.
Everything's going to be so comfortable. Well, it wasn't for me. It was a little challenging. It was just, culturally a very different place. And I had a hard time kind of understanding it. So being a food writer, I decided I needed to tackle this through food. I needed mm-hmm. to sort of better understand this region of mine through a specific foodway or dish, and came to grits sort of, after thinking through kind of what the dish would be for a long time and how I would explore this topic, it came to grits kind of sideways in that, like I said, I didn't grow up eating grits. My husband did, and he was a big fan. And kind of had gotten me back into them as an adult. But the topic of grits itself, it was during an interview with Chef Sean Brock, who I was talking to him about a story on vegetables, and just sort of casually threw out what he thought about grits, and he had this reaction of, you know, that was like, oh, don't get me started. I could talk about grits a lot. Uh-huh. And so in that conversation, he said something along the lines of, you know, to me, the grits are the ultimate expression of terroir. And I kind of went, what? I thought of grits as something that just came out of a box and, you know, an industrial cereal product, and didn't think of grits as anything, you know, that expressed terroir, which is, you know, that an ingredient takes on the characteristics of the place where it's grown or the soil it's grown in. So I kind of went and did some digging and realized that we actually have so many small millers and farmers that are working with heirloom varieties of corn now, and people are doing things with grits that just haven't been done in a long time. Mm. So all of that sort of got me into this, you know, the rabbit hole. I just started digging, and as you do with food, just started uncovering these really fascinating stories that not just about the dish itself and why it's so important and popular in the South, but also culturally, how it could tell stories about this place,
right?
And help me sift through some of these things I was trying to figure out.
So, in retrospect, after doing so much research, do you think that he was talking really literally about like the terroir of like the soil science and like what made the grits taste a certain way, or do you think it was more figurative, like it reflects the place you're from?
I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I think at the moment he was talking pretty literally, because he uses a very specific style of grits from a miller in Edisto Island, yeah, South Carolina, who was working with this corn variety. But in reality, it is more figurative, because it does give you a sense of a place in the country that not a lot of other dishes do. It can be very regionally specific.
I have to admit, I am a total Yankee, and I didn't really know about grits until a scene in My Cousin Vinny, where Joe Pesci is in a diner and goes, "What is a grit?" But I found this really, really fascinating. This book, in your introduction, you write, you know, as I researched grits, I saw that the dish provided me with a lens through which I could better understand the place I'd come to reclaim. There had been a number of big, thorny topics about the South that, upon moving back, I found myself trying to grapple with: the region's tumultuous history, old and new conversations about race, gender, and how and where women find their place here, politics, both in government and in relation to food, and the changing culinary culture through which people across the South, including myself, identify themselves. And you go on to note that the South is very much evolving as we speak right now, and it has transformed a lot since you were a small kid living there. Just to give us a little sense, like, how exactly is it evolving today?
Well, I think that what we're starting to understand, not just starting to, but have been understanding, is that the South is not one pan region. It's not, you know, all encompassing topics about the South don't fit every community that you're in. So, like any region, it's made up of micro regions. So, you know, the part of Tennessee that I live in is very different than, you know, it, both culturally and in culinary terms, can be different than where, you know, something in East Tennessee or something in the Carolinas or, you know, so I think there's that, the evolution of understanding that, you know, there's so many stories and rituals and traditions and history within these micro regions to explore. And so as those stories are kind of coming to light, we're starting to see, you know, that Appalachia is very different than the Low Country, and to call things, you know, just generically Southern.
Yeah.
It works and it doesn't. You know?
Yeah. And yet,
now the evolution of storytelling is coming through.
Cool. Yeah. And yet, like, grits is really embraced as a point of pride throughout these different communities and in many different ways, it sounds. More surprising, you know, ways than I ever knew, for sure.
Yeah.
I think there's also something interesting about how grits, you know, you mentioned that it is enjoyed now further and further north. It is also a cousin to polenta, which is definitely enjoyed in Italy and elsewhere. But I wonder, do you know why grits haven't been spread more throughout the world?
Well, and if you think about the name grits, you know, the dish itself, cooked ground corn product, cooked with water over heat, you know, and served as a porridge or as part of a larger meal, like that's you can find that in cultures across the world.
I see.
That's not, it's the term grits that has kind of stuck in the South, I guess. So, and you know, to your point, polenta and grits are essentially the same thing, just it's a different milling technique is all it is. But I think in the South, the, you know, the, this region embraced this dish so vehemently and closely because it has so many roots in Southern culture and Southern food history and Southern food ways. And you know, one of the things I attribute that to is actually our history with slavery. And so our enslaved communities that were existed in the South, many of them subsisted on dishes like grits that were, you know, it was either corn was provided with either in rations or could be grown. And it was given to field workers and to the enslaved community as a way to fuel them. It was inexpensive, food. And so that dish was also prepared in the big house, usually by an enslaved cook. So both black and white communities were subsisting on grits, and that led it to become kind of a comforting, you know, dish for many communities and many classes. And that, you know, that dish then, it transfers up to the Northeast and other parts of the country, to the Midwest, with the Great Migration. And so we've got this, you know, the history of the dish itself is rooted deeply in Southern history and culture, and then it kind of spreads throughout the country from here. So it's complicated, you know, and that was hard for me to sort of, you know, relay and research, and then to digest and to understand and to sort of see about this region.
Right. Well, you do a great job of exploring that in this book, but actually take us back to the beginning. Who invented grits?
if you think back to, you know, maize, well, maize was first cultivated in central Mexico, and they first find indications of it maybe 9 or 10,000 years ago. And so maize was, you know, the idea was that it was crafted from the teosinte plant, and agriculturalists, who were mainly women, sort of created maize from, based on seed saving and their work with plants and agriculture. So corn shows up maybe 9 or 10,000 years ago. The research I found was that they're in that same region. They discovered hand tools, like mortar and pestle almost, that were grinding, milling devices with residue of maize. So go back 8,000 years, and you know that the corn that's being grown is being ground by hand. That corn is likely being added, you know, combined with water, cooked over heat, and, you know, that becomes a food source. So to me, in my research, I see grits going all the way back to, you know, indigenous cultures that originally created maize. And
got
so
it
comes, you know, it obviously immediately starts getting transferred and brought to other places, and probably arrives in the southeastern United States around 2,000 years ago when corn kind of starts showing up in this part of America. So the dish itself, while everyone sort of pins it on the South, really has roots, you know, that go back, go back way, way further. So.
And they go back more south than the American South or Central Mexico,
Central Mexico,
to be clear.
And Mexico, you know, there's still such a strong connection and cultural connection with corn there.
So a lot of people think about grits as this uniquely American product, but it was being eaten by Native Americans throughout the Americas instead. Fascinating. And you write about how Chef Sean Sherman, the sous chef, was trying to figure out and trying to, you know, trying to reclaim this dish, basically, and figure out some of the heritage grains or corn crops that his ancestors may have used.
Yes. And so his explorations were really the very first time I encountered an indigenous variation of what grits could be. And so for him, I think the research is, it's not necessarily around grits. It's around that corn porridge, mm-hmm. Dish. And, you know, the application now can be grits, but yeah, there was a blue Cherokee corn that he had prepared as a grits dish. And because he doesn't use any European introduced ingredients, so, you know, even sugar or dairy or anything, you know, the dish was very simple, but so creamy and rich, in the application he used. So yeah, it was remarkable. And, I look forward to seeing how he continues to explore those food ways.
Wow. And yet the typical grits preparation in the American South is pretty simple, but there's usually a lot of butter involved, right? You wouldn't skip that.
It's a blank canvas. Uh-huh. I mean, here it's butter and cheese and salt and pepper, sometimes Tabasco. The dish doesn't have to be much more than that. You know, for breakfast especially, put that next to some eggs and toast and, you know, and maybe some sausage or bacon, and it's good.
Yeah, I thought there was something interesting too, like this strong just assertion that grits should really be left alone for the most part in the South.
Yes, there is. Although I think now people are taking it in new directions, mm-hmm. as they explore dishes that can include grits.
Cool. Well, let's talk about a lot of those new ways after a quick little commercial break. We'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbock cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Coral Lee, and I'm the host of Meant to be Eaten here on HRN. Every week, I look at cross-cultural exchange in food and contemporary media. What determines authenticity? What, if anything, gets lost in translation when cooking foods from another's culture? You can find Meant to be Eaten wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, we're back chatting with Erin Byers Murray about her latest book, Grits. And just to give you guys a slice of some of the topics that are discussed here in this book, because we can't get to all of them as much as I would love to. I love that you have this chapter really dedicated to women's role in grits throughout, mm-hmm. from basically the origins of corn itself. You write women mm-hmm. have played a strong role in this. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so many people I talk to, you know, it goes back to a woman cooking grits. And when I started to kind of explore that even further, you know, looking back at who was sort of literally carrying grits, you know, we were talking about Native American and indigenous cultures, and so many of those people were women who were actually doing the growing, grinding. And then mm-hmm. doing the cooking as well. So you know, from the very early origins, I would say that women had a primary role in bringing it to the forefront. And then, you know, in the kitchens, you know, when you get to the American South, most of those cooks were also women. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I women like Natalie Dupree, who has been an icon of Southern culinary canon, really. You know, she wrote Mastering the Art of Southern Cooking and several other books that, you know, she was touting grits long before mm-hmm. A lot of male chefs were, were cooking grits in their kitchens. And so I, you know, I wanted to explore that and really give, you know, tribute to the people who brought it forward, because I think the nowadays, you know, so many people who are talking about grits or milling grits or cooking grits and touting them are, many of them are men. And, and so wanted to sort of go back and explore the people and the, you know, the women who were, had a hand in this.
I think it's interesting that women had such, an important part in a food that was just really the food of sustenance. It was, it was feeding, it was providing and nourishing. And, you know, it might not be escoffier technique, and, you know, other, you know.
But, I mean, grits are the ultimate slow food. You stand and you stir, you know. It's the woman who can stand by the pot and keep scraping the bottom and, you know, and feed her family. I mean, that really is the bottom line of what grits are, so.
And I love how the word itself, grit, it seems very loaded with meaning of, you know, hardworking, working class, somebody who has true grit, really.
There's a group in the South called Girls Raised in the South, and it's, you know, grits. And, you know, one of the things in the book that I tried to explore, I couldn't find very many female millers, you know, female women who are actually milling corn nowadays. And I did manage to find a couple, but two of them are actually in Oxford, Mississippi. And I loved sort of going through that storyline about who they were and the equipment they used. I mean, these women talk about grit. You know, they're doing a pretty physical job every single day. And also standing alone as women in an industry that's dominated by men. So, you know, because they're selling to restaurants, they're selling to, and one of them, Julia Tatum, who she's young. She decided to take over this business on her own. Cool. I mean, and she was joking about how, you know, the FedEx guy would come and, or UPS guy would come and pick up boxes and he'd be like, Who have you got helping you with this? And she's like, do you see anyone else here? You know? So those are just, you know, the story continues with women in the world of grits.
That's really fascinating. Thanks so much for including so many of these modern day stories. And I guess that brings us to, we didn't really go over how grits have evolved from the stone ground product that was made in mills that are now coming back. But it was this very industrial product for a long time in between, and it still is.
Yeah. That was part of the book that I didn't anticipate exploring, but realized that my research into grits would also take me into the research of milling and the history of milling in the United States. And so, you know, you go from these pretty rudimentary milling devices, hand tools, at stone mills that are run water powered, and then you move quickly into the transition into mechanization and into industrialization. You know, they sort of, the small water powered mill was quickly erased from the American landscape when industrial cereal production began. Those mills were either bought up or closed or, you know, shut down. And so, I mean, that was probably for 75 to 100 years, we were, you know, producing grits like any cereal kind of on this massive scale with, you know, and it went into steel roll mills and production of corn that was very different, you know, because corn became commodified and GMO varieties started being used. So what happened, I think it was probably, you started to see in the 80s and 90s, this some of those mills held out, you know, some of those family-run mills still exist, not many. But then you start to see these, you know, these other small mills start to come back online. So whether it's couples that have like gone to refurbish an old water power mill or that are starting their own mills with, you know, small, you know, electrical mills that are stone ground machines, you know, so you start to see them come back around. I think in the last two decades, there's been a resurgence.
So what is the difference in the product? Sounds like the industrial processes really stripped a lot of the flavor and nutrients, but how does that affect? Yeah,
it does. And you know, across the board say, you know, try to avoid instant grits.
Really?
but there's a place for them for sure. They feed a lot of people, and they feed people quickly. Quick grits and old fashioned grits that they're sometimes labeled, you know, those are less nutritionally enhanced. They're more closer to a straight corn product.
Oh, okay.
But instant grits, there's a whole set of ingredients that are added to them so that they will, you know, puff up and turn into grits really quickly with water. But, you know, not to say that boxed grits by big cereal producers aren't, you know, they're not bad. They're, like I said, they're cheaply produced and they're cheap to purchase, which makes them still a good nutrient source.
Mm-hmm.
But when you compare them to stone ground varieties from small millers, you get, especially when it's an heirloom variety of corn, you know, you start to really see these nuances of flavor and texture. And stone ground grits take longer to cook, and they, you know, there's just a lot of nuance, I guess, to the way that the dish shows up. So you can add less to some of those other, you know, those small batch varieties of grits, but the flavor is still like really it's remarkable.
And I love that. You can find those heirloom varieties that might be blue or red. And mm-hmm. white or yellow, because actually the instant ones are bleached white, right?
Yes. And there's also, you know, in the South, there are certain communities that, you know, the debate over white versus yellow corn still kind of rages on.
Tell me about that.
You know, in some places, yellow corn was beet corn, and so you only eat. Humans only eat the white corn. In other places, you only eat yellow corn. You know, it's not even community to community. It's like household.
Oh my gosh!
But yes, those industrial grits are usually white and colorless and
wow.
You know.
People get feisty about grits.
They do, as they should.
You have a whole chapter about how grits have been used as a political tool throughout the ages.
Yes.
And it sounds like the most recent one, one of the most recent ones, was when the FDA, was it the FDA or the USDA?
USDA
decided to put new guidelines on school foods that had to do with, you know, whole wheat instead of, you know, ultra processed, and that left out grits, and a lot of parents got upset.
Well, it didn't leave them out. They wanted 100% whole grain grits. And so the complaint from the kids was that there were little, speckles in their grits.
Oh, no.
And so they wouldn't eat them. You know, they were used to a quick cooking grit product. Mm. And so the argument was, oh, you know, grits are no longer allowed in schools. Well, you know,
Cue right-wing trolls attacking President Obama.
Right. And all he was trying to do was say, actually, let's take a whole grain grit,
yeah.
which is more nutritionally valuable, and put that in lunches. But they didn't focus on that. They took it the other direction. So
what is going on now? Did they just revert back to, you know, everything is all good to eat now?
Well. we're gonna let that go for now. But yeah, unfortunately.
But it sounds like you're a big proponent of the whole grain grits, the stone ground grits, that is, from smaller mills for its variousness and flavor.
Me and what I make at home, that's what I'm cooking usually, just because I like to explore those flavor profiles too. You know, really, mm-hmm. you know, if you, not that I frequently make two different kinds of grits side by side, but, you know, if I'm making a shrimp and grits dish, I might do one time with blue grits, I might do one time with a Cherokee white corn, you know, I might, you know, just to see what the difference is and to see how the flavors play off each other, because they really, the nuances really are there. So.
Wow. What's your favorite way to make grits lately?
This is so simple, but it's almost like a polenta dish the way you make it, but I like to add like a Gruyere cheese to the my grits and kind of add something really tangy to the grits itself. And then saute some mushrooms, maybe some shallots, a little vermouth, some thyme, and just top the grits with the mushroom mixture. And it's just this, like, simple, comforting, perfect dinner in the winter dish.
Vermouth in the splashed in the mushroom sauces.
And then the really tangy cheese and the grits. It's a really, that's a crowd pleaser.
Okay. I have one oddball question. Has anyone done a dessert grits? Like, why doesn't that exist?
Well, there are, I've seen grits in some sweet applications. Usually it's like a variation of cornmeal. You know, you would just need to, however you're using the meal, you could, you know, if you were going to make like a cake with cornmeal, you could use grits instead. It would just be, you'd have to be careful and use the right amount of liquid so that you're not getting like, you know, big kernels of crunchy, you know, crunchy.
True.
But yeah, I've seen grits show up in breads and a lot of, other baked goods. So it's, there's a lot of playing around that people are doing.
I'm thinking faux dairy, you know? I don't know. Something to try.
Well, it's also gluten-free. So, you know, that adds another a texture. So.
Gluten-free, dairy-free, unless you add the butter. It's really a testament to, as your book shows, grits is really constantly evolving as we speak. So, it looks like that's about all the time we have today, though, to get into this book. But I hope everyone checks it out because there's so many more stories that you've uncovered and they're all so fascinating. So thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks. And happy St. Patty's Day, everyone. And we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.